Visit standuptocancer.org to learn more.
Nation. But during this critical time, you can make a difference. Join the Department of Veterans Affairs and save lives. We need medical professionals at every level, including retirees, to help care for patients in facilities in every state and through telehealth. You can be brought on quickly, and this won't impact federal retirement for retirees. Will you join us? Visit va.gov/join us to learn more.
Did you know 22 Americans die each day waiting for organ transplants, most of them for kidneys? The good news is that MatchingDonors.com is helping to change that. MatchingDonors.com is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that links organ donors with people in desperate need of kidneys and other transplants. And now you don't need to donate a kidney to save a life. You can donate your boat, car, or real estate, with 100% of the proceeds going to help save the lives of people needing organ transplants. Visit MatchingDonors.com or call 800-385-0422.
Are you a diehard fan of Howard University athletics? Looking to lend support to the Bison teams you love? Then make sure you check out Howard University's Bison Express, an organization formed by the fans of Howard University Athletics that is dedicated to providing an exceptional athletic and educational experience for the student athletes. For more information on Bison Express, visit bisonexpress.org. bisonexpress.org.
Welcome to the Orphan Diaries. Here's the founder of Food for Orphans, Gary Van Dyke.
Ken doesn't know how old he is. He guesses at around 7. His whole life has been centered on finding food. You see, he lives at the dump and he's never been anywhere else. You can find Ken walking in a decaying landfill of rotting garbage, plastic bags, and shards of broken glass. To many, Ken and children like him are invisible. But they're not, are they?
For more information, visit www.foodfororphans.org.
Hi, I'm Jay Schutte, an American farmer, giving back to agricultural leadership of tomorrow with $2,500 I won through the America's Farmers Grow Communities Program, sponsored by the Monsanto Fund. I really benefited from agricultural leadership of tomorrow as a young professional. I encourage farmers to support their favorite nonprofit through the Grow Communities Program. Enroll now. Visit www.growcommunities.com or call 877-267-3332.
Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues, 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. From the ballot box to the courtroom, we're not at the end yet, but we could be at the beginning of the end. Former Vice President Joe Biden is expected to speak tonight about where election 2020 is. Even as this happens, the GOP and the Trump campaign are pulling out all of the legal stops. Could we see another Bush v. Gore all the way to the Supreme Court? My guest is A. Scott Bolden, attorney, political analyst, and former chair of the D.C. Democratic Party. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at H. Fisher, W-H-U-R, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm good. Can you hear me tonight?
I most certainly can. Sounds like you're counting ballots over there, all that noise in the background.
Oh, really?
Boy, I tell you.
Stop it.
Yeah, I know. Hey, we've already started. I wanted to let our listeners know that we will be talking to you as well. We want to hear what you have to say again at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Okay, Scott, let me ask you this first. Are you surprised that we are where we are? Here we are some 3 days after Election Day and still close but not decided for this presidential race.
I'm surprised that the vote count is taking this long. I'm not surprised that the White House and Donald Trump unleashing lawyers on the process to try to maintain some semblance of possibility for winning this election. I think that possibility is gone and highly probable that Biden is going to be the president-elect. What happened in this election that none of us could call, not even the pollsters, is that that last 2 weeks of Donald Trump's efforts to get out his voters, to find new voters in white rural America, those who are without college degrees, he really turned them out. He overperformed. And so the closeness in these swing states not only reflect those new voters and him getting out his base, but also a very energized Democratic base that was voting for Biden and against Trump in a meaningful way. Black women, black men, suburban women. This coalition that was a little different than Obama's coalition, but quite effective. If he turns Georgia blue, even by the thinnest of margins, then Stacey Abrams and Fair Vote and all of her coalition building efforts will have come to fruition and the beginning of it being a long blue state called Georgia.
You know, we've seen this kind of thing before, but depending on how old you are, a lot of folks may not remember Bush v. Gore, especially some of our young voters. How is this similar and how is this potentially different from the dimples and hanging chads of the 2000 election?
Well, it's very different. You didn't have the Republican nominee attacking the integrity of our democracy and the hardworking people who are just trying to count votes, both in Democratic-run states and Republican-run states. That's a huge difference, right? The second difference is what got to the Supreme Court was whether you could continue counting these ballots and eyeballing these hanging chads and whether those ballots should be accepted or not. Here, you have an assortment of baseless claims being made by the Republican National Convention and Donald Trump and their lawyers in connection to whether mail-in ballots are illegal ballots. They are not. In 9 states, everyone gets a mail-in ballot for convenience, including Utah, which is a Republican state, including the District of Columbia and 8 other Democratic states. The argument that the watchers, the election watchers for both candidates could only stand 25 feet away versus 6 feet away. It's like a series of lawsuits nipping at the heels of the integrity of the vote. But the mail-in ballots help Donald Trump, too. He got a lot of mail-in ballots in Michigan and Wisconsin. And many of these states that are up for grabs right now or swing states are run by Republican leadership. And so his arguments are not only baseless, but they won't hold water, and they're rooted in hypocrisy. When they get to court, they'll either have to have empirical data or factual support for these outlandish claims when a lot of good government workers around this country are just trying to do their job, because their credibility is on at stake, and many of them are Republicans. They just want to get a final count out. And so we'll have to see what happens in court, but you got to have evidence. Even if you get to the Supreme Court, you got to have some evidence before judges can grant you any relief.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about election 2020, certainly, but we're also discussing specifically from the ballot box to the courtroom. Could election 2020 end up at the Supreme Court or even lower courts, and what might that look like and why? If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kay, calling from Falls Church. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Kay, are you there? Can you hear me? Kay?
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead. Turn your radio down, please. And go go right ahead.
Not on. Yeah, I just don't think that this is going to be the same situation as like Gore Bush, because back in that time, I think the race was tweaked a little bit more towards Republicans. It was just swinging that way, no matter what. And so, you know, I just think if Trump goes to court, it's just not going to turn out to be anything. Let him recount. But majority of the people who did their mail-in ballots, I think, are going to be Democratic. And if they recount, it might even end up swinging more Democratic. So I'm not really worried about that. My only real worry is, you know, once the votes are counted and Biden becomes the president-elect, is how we're going to be able to pull everybody back together and get this idiot out.
Mm.
Thank you.
But thank you so much, Kay. A couple of things about what Kay just said, Scott, though. You know, back in 2000, it was Florida, Florida, Florida. Now it's what, Georgia, it's Nevada, it's Arizona, it's Michigan, it's Pennsylvania, and on and on and on. And, you know, I beg to differ, because she was saying things were swinging in Republican. The Supreme Court has at least three Republicans who were appointed by the sitting president. So,
yeah.
the Republican influence is a thing on that high court.
But here, compared to Bush v. Gore, Gore was behind. Gore was fighting for more votes, and there was only one place to get more votes, and that was in Florida. And so he was pushing to keep counting. Bush was pushing, and his lawyers, to not keep counting. But the other biggest difference in 2020 than in Bush v. Gore is what you said. There's several states in play. There are no hanging chad arguments. But Biden has three or four different ways to get to 270, right? And the greatest risk for Donald Trump, which is why he's got to take a scattershot approach to filing lawsuits in these four to six jurisdictions, is that if it may not matter, right? So if he wins Pennsylvania, it doesn't matter what happens in those other states. If he wins Nevada and Arizona, it doesn't matter what happens in Pennsylvania, because he's at 270. And if he gets to 270, there's no way that Donald Trump can get to 270. He can make his claims and arguments that are baseless, if you will, and without any determined facts or data or evidence that the court, even if he's Trump, without any basis whatsoever, it's going to be hard to succeed in state court. And you got to come up with an argument to get in federal court, because, you know, the state elections are run by each state. The voting is not a federal jurisdiction issue. It's all at the state. You have to exhaust that until you get to the state Supreme Court, and then go to the federal Supreme Court or the Supreme Court of the United States and see if they'll even hear the case. A lot of these claims and prior lawsuits leading up to Election Day, at least in two instances, the Supreme Court refused to hear them, letting what happened at the state level stand.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, because although we've not had it on this program, but I think we do need to, you know, just briefly kind of explain what a hanging chad is, because, again, there were some first time voters. We keep hearing about, you know, chads and dimples, and they don't remember, back in 2000, you know, in Florida and in other states in some cases, but most notoriously in Florida, voting was done with a punch card, and you had an instrument that punched a hole where your candidate's name was, and sometimes those punches only created a dimple, or it punched through, but the paper, the fragment, was hanging from the back of your ballot, and that was called a chad. And that
big brother.
Yes.
And the young people, they may not have been alive.
That's right. They my daughter, she doesn't know what a chad or a, I mean,
right.
she's got, you know,
right,
dimples on her cheeks, but that's about all we have. You know,
right.
and so that was the problem, because the Florida count people the ballot counting. They had all of these punch cards that they were holding up to see if you could see light through them and the whole bit. Yes, in 2000 was a mess. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Barbara calling from Germantown. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Let's hope so.
I just wanted to piggyback off of what you were talking about with the earlier caller about the Bush versus Gore. If you can remember, Florida was down to the same scenario as we are right now. And what Jeb Bush did was he threw the election and gave it to his brother. Whereas right now, all eyes, the world, is they have their eyes on this election. And what number 45 wanted to do was he wanted somebody to step in the Republican Party and do the same thing that Bush did in that area, in that Jeb Bush did for his brother, is throw the election. That's why he's yelling, stop counting in one area, but count where it favors him.
There you go. Barbara, thank you so much for your institutional memory. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Larry calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Larry. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm listening to you and your guest.
Yes.
We're going to have a repeat of 20 years ago, but it won't be just one state. It'll be five states. And Joe Biden has the numbers because of massive fraud in Arizona, Detroit, Nevada, and also what's going on now in Georgia and Pennsylvania, so forth. So there is evidence. I keep hearing what's the proof, but it's going to come out, and he's going to be exposed.
What is it?
What is the proof, Larry?
You said fraud. What is it?
It's many things. Dead people on the list. Dead people on the roster. You got illegal aliens. Well, let me speak. You got illegal aliens that's voting. People coming from other with Nevada. You got 30 days. You have 30 days and so forth. And then you got one lady was on there talking, an elder lady in Nevada, when she went to go vote. They said somebody they already voted for you. But the mocking media is protecting Biden because I put it this way: Lyndon Johnson. You look at his history. He was going to go to prison. So he killed Kennedy. So Joe Biden, he's facing prison because he's a Chinese operative. They got Mr. What's his name? Tony Bobulinski has evidence because he business with him. But just watch and see. I said about a month ago or two, we were about just a hair trigger away from the a second civil war and a race war. Watch it kick off.
Okay.
You think it's a joke? You think it's a joke? It's going to affect me. It's going to affect you and your family. And I would say before this month is out or before the year's out, all hell is going to break loose.
Okay.
So think on that.
Well, Larry, thank you so much. I will say one thing about what Larry is saying. You know, we are seeing a more polarized country. As a drinking man, what flavor is your Kool-Aid, Scott?
I don't know what
Kool-Aid Larry had going on there, but
yeah, but Larry's got his view of the world, and I interrupted him because I wanted to hear what this evidence was. Let me tell you something. He was using anecdotal evidence. Let's say all of that happened in those anecdotes and those instances. What every research, Pew Research and other research, tells us is that there are no perfect elections, but is it widespread to the point where it would affect the outcome of an election in a state?
Hold your point, Scott. I need to take a break, but hold your point because I want you to finish, and then we're going to talk to Jay calling from Glen Burnie. We're going to talk to Lisa calling from Bowie, so please don't hang up. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. And, of course, we are going to keep an eye on the Joe Biden speech if it happens. Tonight we will be breaking into the quiet storm later on as that happens. But John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. And this discussion continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about from the ballot box to the courtroom. Is that where election 2020 is going? My guest is A. Scott Bolden, attorney, political analyst, and former chair of the D.C. Democratic Party. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Scott, go ahead and finish your point about some of the things that Larry was saying, you know, the anecdotal, you know, versus real proof.
Yeah, and so what Larry was discussing was anecdotal evidence and then putting a massive conspiracy with it to show or to demonstrate that perhaps this was widespread fraud and therefore he was the election was being stolen. Well, if the election is being stolen, then you're going to have a lot of evidence and a lot of instances like that, especially in states that are run by the GOP. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Secondly, even if you were able to show that there were anecdotes like that or instances like that, and every election may have them, and we know this, there's no empirical data to support any widespread fraud whereby elections are being stolen literally in the history of this country at the federal or state level because the systems are so very secure. And so even in court, you would have to show not only those facts, but then that those facts and the number of votes they affected would have a significant impact on the outcome of that particular race. It's a huge second point or second prong that you have to prove in order to get relief. And we there simply, at least at this point, we don't have enough of that other than political rhetoric from Donald Trump, who happens to be losing in the remaining four states that are still counting. And so that's what I wanted to share with your listeners.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lisa, calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, here's where I'm rather concerned. And that is that we underestimate the craziness of the Trump administration. Think about this. The longer that he can delay will give that party enough time to reach, I believe it's December 15th. And if we go beyond December 15th and he's already stacked the court in his favor, it allows time for his latest Supreme Court jurist to be read in. So there's a reason why they're delaying it. And so if he challenges it and he goes past, the 15th deadline, it could delay certification of the incoming president-elect, which is all that they're trying to do. So, and that's allowing the Supreme Court to ultimately rule in his favor that quite possibly the mail-in ballots, which put Biden over the top, could be ruled as not countable. So I don't want the Democratic Party to be reactionary and keep following the craziness, because there's a reason why they're doing this. They've already anticipated all options. We operate on, well, this has been the Constitution and we're going to do it this way. It's been done for 200 years. Trump ain't never followed anything for 200 years of our democracy. So why would he start now?
Okay, Lisa.
We have to look at the possibilities on the other end. What could happen if
So, Scott, first of all, is Lisa correct? And secondly, explain the certification process, because that was one of the questions that that's so important to get to about certifying the election.
Yeah, so Amy Barrett has been sworn in.
Yeah, she's already there.
Yeah, she's there. So she hasn't voted on a few issues for whatever reason, because she's trying to get up to speed. But so she's in a position to vote. She should recuse herself if it's an issue with this election. But she's available, and if she wants to vote on anything coming to the Supreme Court, she certainly can. That's the first thing. Second of all, I believe that date for certifying the vote may be December 15th. But what's most important is the electors, if you will. If the electors come to Washington, I believe on December 15th, and they have to actually vote in Congress to certify the 270 electors. I think that's what the caller is really, really trying to get at. It's either December 15th or January 8th. And if they don't, for example, which there's a possibility, you know, one of the things that we haven't talked about is, what if the state legislatures, who are Republican states, refuse to seat their electors? Then, and these are states that Biden won, but are Republican run state legislatures. They could refuse. They could name three different electors, or however many number of electors you have, who will then come to Washington and vote for Trump. Under the Constitution, that's what's possible. It's not probable. It's only happened once in regard to Rutherford B. Hayes. But they could flip the script and deny the right of the voters or the will of the voters. Then the Congress, House and Senate, would have to decide whether to sit the electors that were voted upon by the people or the electors by the that were sent here by the state legislatures. Really interesting dynamic. And if they could not decide, right, then the House and Senate would have to decide on who would be the next president by their vote, by the House vote. Now, if they can't decide that, if they can't get enough votes and Senate can't approve them for whatever reason, given how divided we are, guess who gets to be the interim president after January 20th? If you don't have all that done by January 20th, guess who gets to be the interim president? And nobody knows what happens after that, but that would be the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Really interesting. Really interesting.
Oh, my.
You made me go way back in my law school books to share that answer with
you. Yes, I appreciate that. And there will be a pop quiz on Monday. Lisa, thank you so much, Lisa, for bringing up these fascinating points. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jay calling from Glen Burnie. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, good evening to you, good sir. You had mentioned, you made reference to it earlier about
Bush v. Gore.
Yeah, exactly, Bush v. Gore, and when you were talking about the Chads and Dimples. See, this particular, I guess, scenario does not may not contain the same ingredients as the Bush v. Gore, because if you recall. Maybe sometime back in the first week of December, I think of 2000, when they went to the Florida Supreme Court, and I think it was about like a vote of 4-3, they ordered a statewide recount of all the undervotes, and over 61,000 ballots were of the votes that were tabulated had been missed by the machine, and so I was an election judge that year. And I remember using the machines, and so Florida was just a big mess at that time. And so this time, you know, using manual and, of course, a much improved ballot marketing device, I think eliminated, you know, a scenario like that from, you know, happening again, occurring again. And so the Bush campaign had immediately asked for the Supreme Court to keep the decision and halt the recount.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think at this point, as you all again touched on earlier, this has like so many different levels and different states and so many different dynamics involved. Yeah. That's what makes the difference.
Well, Jay, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ruth, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Ruth. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to address Larry and the other callers who called earlier. The issue with this election, and there are many issues, is that these ballots need to be counted and a decision need to be made. But one of the things that really struck me last night, I heard Chris Christie, who was or is one of President Trump's biggest supporters, when he said what the president is treading on very, very dangerous ground with what he's doing. There's no evidence of voter suppression. There's no evidence of fraud. If there is evidence, he needs to stop talking about it and bring it to light. But what he is doing is continuing to incite division, and it's very, very dangerous. And if I hear Chris Christie, who has been a supporter throughout this entire process, when I heard him say that, I was like, wow, we need to stop this foolishness, get this election wrapped up, and move on.
Yeah.
And start to bring the country together, because this is crazy.
Ruth, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. You know, so Scott, here's one of the really critical things is that if in some cases, for example, it looks like there's going to be a recount in Georgia, and I think the Trump campaign is also asking about one in Michigan. But just generally speaking, what is the risk of a recount in a state where Trump is losing, but the GOP House or Senate races are won, by those candidates? In the event of a recount, do they recount everything from dog catcher to president, or do they only recount the presidential vote?
They only recount the vote, the race where one of the candidates has petitioned the election judges to recount. So, for example, in Georgia, if you're within 0.05, and each state is different in regard to how you get a recount. Some you can get one no matter what. Others you have to be within 0.05% of the winning tally. In Georgia, whatever the case may be, it's going to be within that 0.05%, which is why the election leader for that state, the election registrar, as I say, has said, we're going to start the recount anyway. Because when we get done with Georgia, the person that's going to win is by 2,000 to 5,000 votes. So we know it already. So they're bringing in more people to just start it right away. Historically, recounts don't change the outcome or the number of votes by much. Again, you hear me keep talking about the second prong of any test is, would it make a difference? Mm-hmm. Because if it won't make a difference, if there are not enough votes out there to overcome the winning tally, then it's a moot issue. So in Georgia, where I think like in Arizona or Nevada, he's up by about 20,000 votes. If you do a recount or you ask for a recount, historically recounts may only change a handful of votes comparatively speaking, and if it's not going to overcome 20,000 votes or even 10,000 votes, you're just not going to get those dramatic swings the way you got with the counting the mail-in votes in states where states allow mail-in votes. And you saw Trump up by 600,000 votes in Georgia. And then when they started counting the mail-in votes, you saw him go up by, 3,000 to 5,000 votes right now. You're not going to get those mad swings unless you have massive voter fraud, and we don't have any evidence of that right now. It may change a handful of votes, comparatively speaking.
How would you describe massive voter fraud? Because the commission that the president opened up, I think it was Chris Kobach from Kansas, mm-hmm. who was heading that. And it's so interesting, in hindsight, there was all of this energy around the allegations that the president was making about millions of things, and that thing just quietly died on the vine.
Well, it died on the vine because the secretaries of state in the United States, none of them wanted to turn over their voter ID data, their registration data, which included Social Security numbers and addresses. Even Republican secretaries of state refused to turn it over. That's the first thing. Second of all, a massive voter fraud would have to be a not just partisan, but a pattern in practice of illegal registrations, for example, where you had people or group registering voters that did not exist, registering illegal aliens, registering people who weren't qualified to vote in that state, like felons or people in jail, people who don't live in that jurisdiction. And if you found a pattern and practice of that, right, in some county or city, then that would give you pause for concern, because the voter rolls would then have to be purged, right? And if these individuals voted and you found out afterwards, and it was a massive operation, right, in any state, then the courts would have to step in, and you'd have to purge those voters, purge those votes, right, and then come up with a new number. But the idea that that's going on and the ability to prove that or discover that would be an incredible undertaking that simply does not exist. There's no history of that whatsoever, other than the political and hypocrisy of what the president says. The difference between Bush v. Gore and what the president is saying now is he's just espousing allegations mm-hmm. and accusations and aspersions. That's all he's doing. His lawyers are out there fighting over that in some form or fashion. But it's not like he's holding a press conference and putting up something and saying, this is what we found. And that's a huge difference, because otherwise it's just political rhetoric. It's not political reality.
What is the difference between Trump campaign lawyers and the RNC lawyers who are going to look into that? I mean, does one have more muscle than the other? Is there any more legitimacy lended to an RNC attorney heading to these six states now, as opposed to a Trump campaign-backed lawyer?
From a perception standpoint, and from a party standpoint, that is a party to a lawsuit, you have to have a vested interest. You have to have a vested interest in the outcome, the standing, right? And so the party lawyers will argue early on in their papers that we have standing because the outcome directly affects Donald Trump as a candidate for the president of the United States, and he is a GOP candidate. The GOP will argue we have standing because he's running on our ticket, if you will, and that they should be allowed to argue this issue because it has a direct outcome on who's in the White House and whether the GOP is in the White House. But there's not much difference in their standing or their interests. But the GOP, the thing to remember about the GOP and President Trump's lawyers is they have a shared interest. And so it's more lawyers, it's more parties on their side arguing to either halt the vote or keep counting, or fraud, or whatever their claim will be. And so the more the merrier on that side, screaming about bad things happening in this election. Does that make sense?
It does. And okay. and I also want to talk about...
And by the way, Biden and the DNC will do the same thing.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been, right. Former Vice President Biden has been saying wait and see doesn't mean that his lawyers aren't in the starting blocks with their track shoes on.
Well, they're organizing. They have a team, including Eric Holder and Bob Bauer, who heads up a five-person team called the 500 Club or the 500, oh, the Fighting Fund, if you will, the Biden Fighting Fund. And those five lawyers head up, and each of them have teams of lawyers that are supporting them to beat back the GOP allegations and accusations.
So let's talk about the road to the Supreme Court and where how would something like where we are get to the Supreme Court? You know, there were certainly I'm sure that a lot of these things would start with, you know, with the state courts. If you're talking about, you know, allegations of ballots being found, what kind of argument would get this to a Supreme Court? How quickly would it have to be? I mean, are we waking up judges, you know, in the middle of the night with their slippers and hats with the little balls on them and the robes like you see, you know, to, well, how does that work?
Unless there's a federal issue regarding the election outcome, and simply being a federal election for the presidency doesn't necessarily get you jurisdiction in federal court. The claims against the election outcome or the votes is a state issue, and the state retains jurisdiction over that. You would have to go to a state court, then an appellate court, and then you would go to the Supreme Court for that state, and then appeal it to the Supreme Court of the United States, traditionally. Now, the time frame would probably be expedited. Both sides would want a decision quickly on the appeal, on the two appeals, and then to the Supreme Court, because you got these deadlines coming up, state deadlines for certification, and then you've got the elector deadlines, and, you know, you got to have an inauguration, and somebody's got to be in the new president. If there's going to be a new president, it's got to be sworn in by January 20th. That's in the Constitution. And so you have real and perceived deadlines here. And so everything would be expedited, right? Now, the only thing so far that has given the Republicans some slim hope of getting to the Supreme Court is Alito in what we call obiter dicta, a decision that was made, but it's not the base of the decision. It is a statement, a gratuitous statement made in opinion, where Alito and one of the other conservative judges on the Supreme Court said, we're not gonna answer the question as to whether votes or registrations earmarked or received, rather, votes received after the deadline, after Election Day, right? Because the lower court in Pennsylvania, I think, indicated that as long as they were postmarked, these mail-in ballots were postmarked by November 3rd, then they could receive them up to 3 days later. Have to count them today, right? Now, the legislature, there's case law, Supreme Court case law, that says that state legislatures are the only ones that can define the outlines of what the voting requirements are one way or the other. However, when they went to court, in state court, the judge said, given COVID, given all of these other challenges, the Secretary of State indicated that as long as they were earmarked by November 3rd, he or she would accept them until Friday. Alito indicated that while he was not going to interrupt that or disturb that, he indicated that depending on the results of the election and how the election went, and if there was another claim made after the election, he suggested strongly that that may be something for them to hear, because it's one thing for a judge to interpret the law, which is what they're supposed to do. It's another thing to make the law. That is, to render a decision that goes beyond the law that the judge is interpreting or creates a whole new law that would essentially be in the domain of the state legislature in most jurisdictions, in most state constitutions. And so there, if they made that argument and they could get to the Supreme Court, and you can get to the Supreme Court, because even if you lose in the state court, you just keep appealing. In some states, those ballots that were earmarked or postmarked for November 3rd that got there later, they may have some traction. And That might get them some traction to the Supreme Court. But again, remember the second prong. Is that enough to upset or change the outcome of the presidential election in that state? If it isn't, right, if there are not enough votes in that category, or if Biden has won, gotten to 270 by in other states or by winning other states, right, then it's a moot issue. And they're unlikely, the GOP is unlikely to get that relief because of the mootness of their argument.
One of the, and you talk about the, you know, the ballot issue. And as you know, District Court Judge Emmett Sullivan here in D.C. was not happy when he, you know, signed the order for that sweep of postal offices where ballots, mailed-in ballots, had not been registered through the mail.
They processed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Right.
And then when it. And he wanted that done by 3 o'clock on Tuesday, Election Day, November 3rd. It didn't happen. And then, you know, he issued the statement. He issued yet another order to have this done. How significant is this order that Judge Sullivan issued in the grand scheme of this week?
Well, even any order from a federal judge, if enforceable, and it is, or practical, is important and effective, because unless you appeal it, you've got to honor it. And the sweep of the post offices falls in line with the GOP treatment of the post office and the processing and this whole mail-in issue that GOP and the president believes are part of a fraudulent scheme. But they're making it a fraudulent scheme because of who runs the post office and these changes that have limited and delayed mail getting to so many of us around the country. The question, though, is it enforceable within this time frame? Because now we're 2 days past the election.
Mm-hmm.
Post office still has to sweep it. They will argue that they did the best they could, but you know what? If those ballots didn't make it, if their ballots sitting there in the mail bags and stuff, and they're just sitting there and they didn't make it, it's far too late to deliver those ballots. But look for him to sanction the post office for not following the spirit, intent, and the effectiveness of his order, essentially walking him down. Because they did not put the manpower behind it to make good on his order.
Final thoughts from you, Scott. Do you think the Supreme Court will get a chance to peek at any issue regarding election 2020, or do you have a gut feeling that it is all going to end at the state level?
Well, anything is possible, and if it does get to the Supreme Court, I just don't think the arguments are strong enough to get relief that would change the outcome of the election and what it looks like the outcome is going to be given where the votes are in these four or five states. We're a long way from that. I do think that the court would argue that if you change the intent and spirit of the state legislature's rules on voting, they could reverse that, but I don't think there are enough votes that you throw out that would change the outcome of what we think the election is going to be. But look for Donald Trump to do just that, unless there is a Republican statesman who comes to him one-on-one and says, essentially, the barbarians are at the gate, Mr. President. It is over. And to date, no one in the Republican Party is statesman enough to stand up to him, except in this particular case. What if they believe that he's lost, that the king is dead, if you will, for lack of a better term, that the king is dead, he no longer has control of the GOP, I want to run in 2024, maybe I push this along, maybe he doesn't control us anymore. That's the first thing to look for. The last thing to look for is possible violence after this election is over and determined because of Donald Trump's rhetoric.
Yeah.
You know, they arrested two people from Virginia for who went to Philadelphia to attack the voting conference, the convention center.
Yeah.
Look for his supporters if he directs them, real or perceived, to come to Washington and surround the White House with their guns and what have you, and try somehow to defend him or bar his removal.
Yeah.
Unlikely to be successful, but I worry about that and the safety of our citizens because of the price of democracy. We'll have to stay vigilant.
Yes, indeed.
And there'll have to be Republicans and Democrats who stand up against that anarchy.
Scott, I appreciate your time. Gosh, barbarians at the gate. Haven't heard that in a while. Hey, Scott Bolden, thank you so much for talking to us. That is The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Friday, November 6th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, man.
All right.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.